Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. We have on with us today, as guests, the family of Brian Parnell, who is currently serving a life sentence in prison for a 1997 murder that the family says he did not commit. Brian was convicted after a hasty two-day trial rooted in 2 4-year-old partial fingerprints, and despite DNA evidence that excludes Brian, he has always maintained his innocence. Fighting tirelessly for his exoneration for 20 years, Brian's countless appeals and petitions have been denied by the judicial system. He's been victim to ineffective counsel, a faulty investigation, and inadequate evidence, and his family is speaking out, asking for justice to be served in an unjust and corrupt situation. We have all too many situations occurring in the United States, such as Brian's, and his family is here to talk about it. We want to make sure that justice is served. So we're asking everyone to listen carefully to Brian's story and ask questions. Call in if you must. Call in and ask questions. Okay. So we are now going to welcome our guest. Hello. Can you hear me? Hello?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, we're going to have to ask that no distraction in the background so that the audience can hear you.
Okay.
And do you want to introduce yourself? We have already started the show, so if you can both introduce yourselves to the audience and let them know a little bit about yourselves and your relationship to Brian.
Okay, my name is Karen Johnson, and I am advocating for Brian Parnell. Brian is my fiance, and we have been fighting to get his wrongful conviction overturned.
And who else is on the call with us?
I'm not sure. Because the link that was given...
No, the link that was given was the right link. Something happened. You must have hit the wrong one. And there is another caller on. I don't know which one you are, 610 or 215.
I'm 215.
Okay, now we have 2 215s. Another one just came in.
Okay.
Can you introduce yourself, please?
Cooper, I am Brian's middle sister. My name is Danielle Cooper.
Okay, now I understand that the invitation link that you received was not the correct one. Now, I don't understand how
correct.
That could be because it was sent to the very afternoon. It was sent to the very emails that I received, and somehow when I clicked on it, it brought me to Facebook. And I don't know how that occurred because that's the first time that's ever happened. And I've been doing the show for a couple of years. So somebody's email or maybe the wrong link was clicked on. I have no idea. But again, can you and Brian's fiance, can you both speak a little bit about how this came about? I did briefly introduce him to the audience for the 1997 murder that he did not commit and that he's been accused of and that he's been denied. And as I was saying, this happens all too often in American prisons with people being, evidence being tampered with, people being accused of crimes they did not commit, and people being denied, especially people of color. So we want to, again, have everyone start speaking about Brian and let the audience know exactly what's going on.
Go ahead, Karen.
Okay. I don't know who else. Yep, I'm here, but I don't know who else is on. Well, Brian, this was a rivalry gone bad. So
can you please just let me know who's speaking? There's two people on. I don't know which one is speaking. So if you can just let us know which one is speaking at the time.
Hi, this is Karen Johnson.
Okay.
Brian, this was a cold case. It went cold in 1997. It occurred in 1997. It stayed cold until they actually picked Brian up for this particular murder. How they got Brian is they said that his partial fingerprint matched the print that was left on the windowsill, on a latch on the victim's home. They said that it must have been a robbery because apparently there was money left out in the open, but it was never taken. And the wife heard, you know, the husband talking to someone in his study, and unfortunately, you know, she didn't think anything of it because she just thought somebody had come to visit. And then she heard a single gunshot, and then apparently heard a claim she heard someone running away. Well, that fingerprint, it was a partial index and partial on the thumb, then turned into a thumbprint. Apparently, after it was tested, apparently about 20-something other people, it matched, I can't remember the exact amount of people, but they never went in and zoomed in on anyone else but Brian. There was a stocking cap left at the home, hair samples. It did not match Brian. Brian gave up his DNA willingly, thinking that, you know, okay, I'm going to give him my DNA and I'm going to go home. But that did not happen. And they kept him because of his fingerprint. Brian had an alibi. He was with his cousin, Maurice, his then-girlfriend, Lakeisha, and her sister. They never called them in to testify as his alibi. He has maintained his innocence all these years. And also with the victim, there were also witnesses or people who were questioned during the discovery saying that there was one gentleman who said that the business owner was an easy target, that he could easily set him up because he was, you know, kind of free with his money, or, you know, he wasn't, you know, he didn't have security or anything like that, you know, jokingly about it. But then after the murder actually happened, he came in and he said something like, "I can't believe what I've done." All of this is in Brian's discovery. It was never brought into the courtroom. He did not have a jury of his peers. He had mainly, Brian is African-American. He had only two African-Americans on his jury, and they were mostly, mainly older, middle-aged Caucasian men and women. So after a one-day trial and less than an hour deliberation, they sentenced Brian to life without parole. Second degree murder, as we know, in Pennsylvania, that carries a mandatory life without parole sentence. And he's been there ever since.
I want to interrupt just for a second, because what you just mentioned with two blacks on the jury, this has happened, and I'm going to tell you out of experience, this has happened a lot. And I believe when there's a person of color on a jury, the majority should be, or at least equal, half and half.
I agree.
Because what's happening in these cases, they have two people of color on a jury, and then those two people most likely are going to be too afraid to go up against all the others, and they usually have a 12 to 14 jury.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to bring that out because it's happened too many times, especially
Very good point.
In America. And we have
yeah.
some other, I guess, relatives on the phone that have come in. So if you want, please introduce yourself, and then we can go back to you.
Okay. Veronica?
I might not be able to keep up with all the names because there are quite a few on the line, but I want to say one thing. Don't hesitate. We have an hour and a half and already into 20 minutes of it. So if you're going to speak on behalf of your relative, please speak and don't hesitate. Introduce yourself, whoever wants to speak first. What happened to Brian's little sister?
Veronica, are you there?
Okay, do me a favor. Okay, if you can speak, Veronica, I'm going to listen to you and I'm going to listen to Brian's fiance. Anyone else that's on the line, if they want to jump in, let them jump in. I'm not going to keep asking questions, okay? So if you if you two can speak, that'll be fine. There is someone else on the phone, 856. If they want to speak up, I hope they will right now.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine.
Okay. I can speak. I'm sorry, I just got on, so I can speak though.
Okay, can you just give your name? Whoever speaks, just give your name, because right now it's kind of difficult to know who's who. And I don't usually do radio shows this late in the evening. So I just hope that I'm going to let you, all of you, talk about the situation. I will back away and just let you go on. Anyone that wants to step in and talk about it, please do. Okay?
Okay, no worries. Sorry, I missed part where you asked people to introduce themselves. Hi, I'm Veronica. Hi, I'm Brian's youngest sister. I'm not sure if there's anyone else that wants to say. Hello?
You're doing fine.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure if anyone else wanted to introduce themselves or they were on. I'm sorry. I would just reiterate what Karen said. I mean, he's been there for over 20 years now. So this is something that our family's been dealing with for a really long time. I'm just happy that the right people are starting to listen to his story. Because anyone that actually listens to the story, they realize that this is ridiculous. It was all based on junk science. It's inaccurate information. And the fact that they have never even, during his trial, the fact that they never even called any of his alibis to testify is just ridiculous. They never called anyone. Yeah.
Can I ask, how long has Brian been in? 20 years?
Yes, 20 years.
How old was he when he went in?
20 years ago, he would have been in his late 20s.
Okay, so he's in his 40s now, or his early 50s.
His late 40s. I'm 30, so he's 48 or 49.
Okay.
Has
the Innocence Project been involved?
We all know that the Innocence Project just deals basically with straight DNA, because they couldn't, they just missed a lot of important, they didn't fight for the fingerprints. If they had fought for the fingerprints, that outcome in 2012 would have been 11 of 2012 would have been different. Like we all know, they just go straight with DNA. If the DNA exonerates them, which they did exonerate Brian from the DNA part, but they did against the fingerprint. They didn't bring any outside unbiased people in to look at the fingerprints, and they didn't push the issue. So unfortunately, Brian remained in jail until this day.
So no one tried to bring in a fingerprint specialist?
No, not from the initial trial and not from when the Innocence Project took it over.
Now, did he have a public defender or did he have a paid lawyer?
He had a paid lawyer.
And that lawyer never suggested?
Never. Never. As his older sister said during that trial, this particular attorney was known to take a case and throw a case. He has since Brian's incarceration, after Brian was incarcerated, he actually was disbarred.
You know, Cynthia, your case is sounding so familiar. Do you know, there's a lawyer right in Massachusetts that did the same thing. You know, he threw the case. He actually called a witness and told the witness not to come to the trial.
Wow.
And
wow.
He was disbarred after the trial, after the person got a life without parole sentence. This lawyer
wow.
did something else right after that, shortly after, and he ended up being disbarred. He's practicing now, but he's practicing solo, to my understanding.
Wow.
But this is what we want the audience to know about too. We have lawyers in this country who will either take a bribe or who will not fight as much as they can or could fight for their clients. We have lawyers that will take someone's money, thousands and thousands of dollars, and meet with the client, the potential client, one time. This country, and again, I wanted to say to Karen that on Wednesdays, I interview Mariam Jacobs from the Netherlands, and she talks about, she's been in the U.S. prisons, and she does volunteer work in the prisons in the Netherlands. But Mariam Jacobs speaks all the time about the hatred, the racism, the injustice, the corruption, the lies that go on in this country. And again, primarily with people of color. And she is a white person that will tell you that she sees it. Other people from other countries, the same thing. They see all these things going on in American prisons. The corruption and the bribery taken, these are the things that we need to fight somehow. And I hope the audience is listening and listening good.
Yes. And, you know, and Brian, his family paid this attorney. And they even tried to get him off the case. They didn't want him anymore. But the judge would not let him be dismissed from the case, because when they saw what he was doing, they asked for him to be removed. Brian put a motion in for him to be removed, and the judge would not grant it. And then they said if they got another attorney, that this horrible attorney had to stay on the case with him. He would still be the lead attorney.
Mm-mm-mm. And this is an attorney in Pennsylvania.
Yes.
Yeah, just like Massachusetts. We have another caller, 267, another relative, or someone calling on behalf of Brian. Do you want to state your name to the audience? 267? Okay. Okay, Karen and Tamara? Veronica?
Veronica.
Okay, thank you, Karen and Veronica. And Danielle and Neil are not on with us?
I'm still here. I'm still here.
Okay.
Oh, Danielle,
so,
you're here.
Yeah, see, I'm getting very confused, and I'm sure the audience is wondering what's going on too. But we have five people on the radio show, and only two are speaking. So if the other three are not, just let me know, and I can put you on mute. Or if you want to say something, please do.
Danielle?
Yeah. Hi. I'm Danielle Cooper, like I said before, and I'm Brian's middle sister. Again, I really do want to reiterate what we're all saying is that we really, 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 really need folks to really pay attention to this case, because this, as you all have seen, could happen to anyone, 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 anyone. If the system feels that you're going to be the perfect scapegoat for a crime, they'll pin it on you. And this is literally what's happened to my brother. Nothing matched, partial print, you know, like Karen said, how do you go from a partial print to a full-blown print? Magic doesn't happen that way.
No.
It doesn't. Now, I really think that they want to control the narrative? Yes. I believe the biggest issue that we're all battling now is to changing the narrative. I mean, we're finally able to speak more liberally, to have people actually pay attention, because I think more and more people are finding out that, yes, this can happen to you or a loved one, and this is how – here's the roadmap of what's going to happen. And here's the other map on how you get out of it. It's very hard. It's easy to put you in, hard as heck to get you out. And for us to be fighting for 20-some-odd years, that's a long time. That's a long time for someone to be incarcerated, to miss literally everything that's going on in our family's lives. Yes, we keep them abreast via phone calls or visits. That's not the same, though, as having that loved one with you, though. It's really not. So everyone that's listening, I really want them to think about something like this, that how it can happen to you, because it's not a dream. It's a nightmare that we've been living for 20 years.
I agree. And I want to say I can relate to you. I've been fighting for my loved one for 25 years, but that was a first-time offender. Never involved with the law, never involved with substances. Worked 4 years college, biology major, getting involved with the wrong person. But I want to say, too, we, and I'm sure you girls can relate to what I'm saying, we never knew what it was like to be in prison. We never knew what it was like to be in a situation where there was so much corruption and lying and deception going on in our government. And we have a lot of lawyers, a lot of prosecutors, a lot of judges that are so corrupt that they will go along with whatever the prosecution talks about and brings out. And this is a thing that's a major issue as well. A major issue.
It is. You're absolutely right. This is, and you hit the nail on the head, it is a numbers game, okay? It's a numbers game. The more you get in, the more you get out. As far as cash, it's sad to say that they're treating human life like cattle, because they obviously you don't care and you're not trying to.
It destroys the families, and that's what I started to say, is that families, we never knew what it was like to be in the penal system. We never knew what it was like to have to deal with a loved one being incarcerated. And I'll tell you, when I first started New Vision Organization, we were doing national, and we did a lot of work in Pennsylvania. We worked with prisoners in Corcoran. We worked with prisoners in Somerset. We worked with prisoners in Huntington, Smithville, Greaterford, Green. We worked with prisoners in all of those prisons, and even the prisons itself, the people that run those prisons, operate them, are just as corrupt, just as abusive and everything else. There were three prisoners in 2007 that died, three, one after another. Nothing was done about it. ACLU was contacted. They didn't do anything. These three prisoners were begging for help. They were alleged to have committed suicide when we knew they didn't, and you probably remember them. But going back to your brother being in a Pennsylvania prison on a crime he did not commit, I'm surprised that lawyers are not jumping at this. But I'll tell you, the lawyers in Pennsylvania, too, are something to be questioned.
Mm-hmm.
Something to be questioned.
I have spoken with numerous lawyers. And, you know, Brian is very well versed in the law, and he does a lot of studying in the law. And the few of the lawyers that I have gone to, when he would go in and look them up, he would find that there would be some discretions on their records. I can't remember the exact terminology, but this one guy in Pennsylvania is known to be like the best appellate lawyer, and Brian had the opportunity to speak with him several times, and when he looked up his record, you know, he...
Hello?
I'm sorry. He would basically give the case back to the courts. So he would throw these cases like, you know, I don't want it and I'm not going to do it. And these people had hired him as an appellate attorney. But he's listed as the top in Pennsylvania. And, you know, if Ryan hadn't have done his homework on him, he probably would have hired him. And God only knows where that would have, you know, led to. It could have been more of a disastrous situation. You know, so I'm grateful that Brian is you know, well-versed in the law and knows how to look up people and knows what to look for, because not only him, it was four attorneys that we were once going to try to go with, and he always found something on each one of them, something that they did to throw a case. And at that point, you know, we had already been the initial one, and then the Innocence Project. So at that point, Brian's very skeptical now. So it's like a no trust thing with him when it comes to attorneys. So, you know, it's like we don't really know where to go because we haven't found someone who he feels comfortable with. And like I told him, it's up to him. He has to feel comfortable, not me. He has to feel comfortable in the right attorney because this is his life. And if I may go back a little bit about the case, you know, the gentleman that the girl who they never brought in to testify, she also testified that after the murder, they had hair samples. He shaved his head bald. And the victim had a business partner who, whenever the police would come in to do more investigating, would hide this gentleman in the back of the store. And so the cops never knew that he was there to question him anymore. They had Brian down as living in the homeless shelter, which Brian never lived in a homeless shelter. He had enough family and he had enough women not to do that, okay? So he never was in a homeless shelter, but we found out later on that the same young man that failed the polygraph test, that said that he was an easy target, that came in and said, I can't believe what I've done, he was in a homeless shelter in Upper Darby. And they never, once they tuned in on Brian, they never went after anybody else. And before the Innocence Project put him back in, these detectives, arresting detectives, went all the way up to Waynesburg to SCI Green to tell Brian, look, just tell the truth. You're wasting our time. You're wasting our money. Why would you travel 6 hours years after Brian was incarcerated since 2001, this is 2011, 2012, to go there and watch them swab his mouth? If you knew that you did everything you were supposed to do, and you even have to go there and do that, why would you have to come back up there and watch them swab his mouth? And I remember the judge saying at that trial, you know, like the DNA doesn't change. And so it doesn't matter if everybody in this courtroom touched this DNA, if Mr. Parnell's DNA, because they couldn't even lift DNA from the fingerprint either. So if they couldn't do that, if it's not there, Mr. Parnell's is not there, it's just not there. But unfortunately, it was just a disaster. That whole thing was just a disaster.
Someone else want to step in?
I did want to at least mention that if anyone wants to, after this is over, if anyone wants to get more information about Brian's story, they can go to the website or go to any of the social media sites and just see everything that's being posted about his case and about what's happening now. You could go to justiceforbrianparnell.com, and that will also lead you to links to go sign the change.org petition that everyone's been working on to get signatures for him. And on Facebook, it's at Justice for Brian Parnell. On Instagram, it's also at Justice for Brian Parnell. On Twitter, it's Parnell, Justice, the number 4, Parnell. But I just wanted to make sure we put that out there in case anyone, you know, wants to take some time after the show and take a look and read more about the story. And there's also some videos on there that you can see with some of us talking about the case as well.
I always wait until the end to have you say that. But also, if you can give the audience any kind of contact information, if anyone has any information or has any way wants to help in your fight for justice for Brian, an email.
They can contact me, Karen Penny Johnson, on Facebook. Penny with an I, Karen Penny Johnson on Facebook. And you can also leave an inbox on Justice for Brian Parnell on his Facebook page You can also leave an inbox.
Okay. And I was just going to give you girls a warning. If you're going to ever look for an attorney in Pennsylvania, you want to stay away from any Cohens and any Lamberts.
I hear you.
Okay.
I hear
I'm
you.
Glad.
And I think one was a Cohen. I actually think one was a Cohen.
And that one messed up, took a lot of money and actually was supposed to have fought for a prisoner's civil rights and ended up getting a settlement and keeping the settlement in addition to almost $20,000 to hire her. So just so you know, those are the ones you want to stay away from. And I actually, I plan on I haven't decided exactly when. It might be the end of this year, it might be the beginning of next year, but I'm going to be having a show, and I'm going to be naming all the lawyers, judges, or anything that people sent to me from whatever state it will be, because we're going to start exposing a lot of these lawyers and these judges
Amazing.
That are doing wrong. But getting back to Brian, so right now, he does have a lawyer or he doesn't? He's fighting it himself?
He does not. He does not have a lawyer, no.
Okay, because if you go on the internet and you type in, maybe type in pro bono appellate or pro bono criminal lawyers in Pennsylvania.
I've done that.
Okay, and there's, I don't know if you've heard of the Lewis, what is it, the Lewisburg Institute?
Yes, in Lewisburg, Pennsylvania. Yes, I have. I have written them as well.
And how about the Pennsylvania Prison Society?
Yes, I have. I'm very, I know Elaine personally.
Okay, and how
She's
about the American Friends Service Committee, the Criminal Justice Division?
Never heard of them.
Okay, you might want to check out the Pennsylvania American AFSC, American Friends Service Committee, and call them and ask them about the Criminal Justice Division.
Okay. You know, unfortunately, like I say, Brian, 20 years, when Brian had three young children at the time, and now, you know, they're 22, 23, 26, 27, something like that. Two of his sons are married. One of his sons has two children, and one has one on the way. And, you know, it's very hard for Brian, you know, to not have, you know, be able to be a grandfather and enjoy seeing his children grow up, one. Number two, and now his grandchildren, you know. So when we have video calls, I kind of pull up Facebook and show him, you know, pictures that, you know, maybe his son has posted and things, you know, any family events, so he can see this. And, you know, and it's like, you know, I mean, I can't even imagine living my life through a video call, looking at a computer screen of my children and my grandchildren.
It must
be
painful.
It has to be very painful.
Yeah, it must
it
be
has
very
to be.
Painful.
And Danielle brought up something at another interview we were doing. Like, she has younger children that Brian has never even met, and Veronica as well, that they have never met their uncle. And, you know, and his oldest nephew is like his son. And, you know, he just loves his uncle and his oldest niece. They love him. But I know Chris a little bit more better than I know Tanita. And he loves his uncle dearly. And he seemed like he was a father to him. He taught him things. He showed him things. He, you know, he talked to him about life. And, you know, and this is something that, I mean, he has done this with his children over the phone, because I've always told Brian, you are still their father. No matter what, it's just that you're not physically there. So don't ever think you cannot father from where you are. And, you know, because he would get a little discouraged. You know, I'm not there. No, it doesn't matter. You can still be their father. You pick up the phone, you call them, you talk to them, and you stay in contact with them. You find out what's going on in their lives, and you try to be a part of it that way. And he has really done extremely well. I don't know if I could have done that. I probably would have just cut everything off. But Brian has continuously been there for his children the best way he to be there. And,
yes.
You know, I have to say his family, you know, has stepped in to help with the children, raising the children. But like I said, they're grown now, you know, and, you know, it's just, I just can't imagine. I probably would have shut down and just not even wanted to be bothered with anything on the outside to help me cope, but that's not Brian. Brian has such a awesome way of coping with things. I almost think he's not human sometimes but I do know he has to go in his cell at night and think about everything, especially after I've showed him stuff and how it must hurt him. You know, like, I'm not there, like, darn. And I know when his grandfather passed, I was on the phone with him, and he got an email and stating that his grandfather had passed. And that was, like, one of the only times that I heard Brian, this tone in Brian. And, you know, it broke my heart. So I got up the next day, and I went up there for a visit, you know, because he was like, I can't believe my grandfather. His grandfather lived to be, how old was he, Daniel, 98? Or something like that, 96, something like that. And it was a sudden death. It wasn't like he was sick. This was a strong man that was out fixing his roof, and he fell, went to the hospital, boom, they found out he had cancer. So it was so unexpected. So I could never fathom hearing that my strong and able-bodied grandfather, who was just up fixing my roof and fixing his roof, he has a fall and then come back with this diagnosis, and then weeks later he's gone. You know, and that stuff like that is so hard, and they don't think about this when they are wrong, when they put people behind bars wrongfully. They just want to close the case. They just want to put a notch in their belt and move up the ladder and further their careers. And meanwhile, Brian, someone like Brian, who never did anything to hurt anybody in his life, and he would, if he couldn't help you, then he would try to find a way to help you. He was just friendly. You know, like I said, when we were, you know, coming along, we were the best of friends. He was just so friendly, and I used to tell him sometimes, sometimes you're a little bit too friendly. Can you stop talking to everybody? You know, but he just fit in. It was like nowhere he went and no one he would be around, and he just didn't fit in with. You know, and that doesn't happen with people. Some people are standoffish. But I don't know. He always, you know, hey, how you doing? Shake hands and, you know, and just sit back and just get in the mix. He never looked at himself like an outsider. He always made himself at home. But it wasn't a pushy at home. It was a genuine friendliness. And that's what Brian had. He's a genuine person. And for him to have to deal with this, knowing that he's innocent, to keep his same mentality that he has kept for all these years, he is just a remarkable man. And, you know, he's just a remarkable man. And I'm glad to know him. Because, you know, I said in another interview, he keeps me up. He keeps everybody up. We can, and all of his siblings and his children, everybody can attest to it. We could be feeling down and have a phone call from Brian, and before you know it, we're laughing, you know, because he's saying something that's going to brighten us up. He's brightening our day, or, you know, make you find something to giggle about. You know, I could be mad, and he'll say something, and I'll be like, you know, I'm really not trying to be upset right here. Like, can you, like, leave me alone right now? But that's just Brian. That's just Brian.
There are so many people like that. I feel so bad. But at the same time, there's a lot of people who have been wrongfully convicted. And the sad thing about it, every state has the same issues, but every state is operated differently. And the dysfunction and the sadness of these people suffering by getting accused of something they didn't do or by going to prison for life and life without parole, these are situations that are decided by our government leaders. It hasn't happened to them, and if it did happen to them, they would find a way out of it. They would find a way out of it for their loved ones. But because it's not affecting them directly, they don't put their effort into trying to find out the truth. They just feel like they're putting somebody in prison and that's it. We did our job. And unfortunately, so many people and families become prisoners as well because of this.
Yes.
And I'll tell you, there's a lot of families of victims who are out there that can't get enough. Even when that person goes to prison, they have to continuously target that person. They have to use every bit of their resources, every bit of their connections to make their lives worse. With Brian, I would contact national. If you're not getting anywhere with help from Pennsylvania, contact the National Action Network. I'm sorry to say the NAACP doesn't seem to do much for anybody anymore, but try to contact any organizations out there that do national work. And I'll tell you, I have to admire Ben Crump, because Ben Crump has a team all over the country now, and he's doing a lot of good. Those are the type of people you want to reach out to.
Okay. All right. I definitely will. Well, I know we will. It's something you said, and it left my thought about the attorneys. It left my thought. I'm sorry. I have to pick it back up.
You but must be around my age.
Huh?
I said that's something I would do at my age.
Oh, girl. but, you know, it's just sad that, you know, so many people, and being in this journey, I have met so many people in the same boat, that we are in, you know. And until then, I really, you know, never knew stuff like this really, you know, that it happened. You know, you see a case here and there on the news, but because of social media, these things are being brought out to light now. And I have had the honor to be a part of some organizations who have helped juvenile lifers and even wrongfully convicted come home. And I've had the pleasure of meeting some of the most awesome men and women who were wrongfully incarcerated. And a lot of them, they came out and they hit the ground running, and they're trying to give back. They're trying to reach back. And I'm just amazed at them, because they are some awesome human beings. You know, I would trust them with pretty much anything, because they are really trying to get back. And, you know, and that's something that Brian wants to do. The minute he comes home, he's going to hit the street running, because he said he has to help. He has to come out and help other people, because he doesn't want anybody else to experience anything like this that he has had to endure for 20 years.
Mm. There's a, I don't know if you're familiar with Gerald Bowling.
No.
Gerald Bowling, he's the founder of Bridges for Change, Bridges and the number four, Change. And Gerald is in Pennsylvania. I don't know exactly what he does, but I know he is networking with another organization or two in Pennsylvania. So you might want to try to look him up and see if maybe there's some way that he can also give some resources or help in some way.
Bridges, the number four, Change?
Bridges for Change. Bridges and then the number four, Change.
Okay, I definitely will look it up.
Also, I don't know if you've tried the Cardoza Project, and I think that came out of the Innocence Project, but the Cardoza Project is another one that works with the wrongfully convicted.
I think that kind of is ringing the bell, but I'm not sure. Like, there's so many, you know, we went to Centurion, we went to so many places, so that one is ringing a bell.
Have you contacted any of... Have you contacted any of the politicians, even the caucus,
no,
the Black Caucus?
Who?
The Black Caucus?
Yes, they are aware of Brian's case.
Okay.
But
are they
nothing has been done. Nothing has been done as of yet.
Okay. One of the things is they're working in Massachusetts and other and a few other states. They're working towards abolishing life sentences and life without parole sentences. And what I was thinking is maybe you could go on the internet and just type in legislative members in Pennsylvania for prison reform, and maybe start contacting some of them to find out if there's, you know, if there's anything being worked on as far as these wrongfully convicted. I interviewed a Jeffrey Deskovic not too long ago.
Jeffrey
was sentenced to prison when he was 16 years old for a crime he did not commit. And he came out, he was exonerated, he came out, and he got his master's in criminal justice and became a lawyer for the wrongfully convicted. But I'm sure there are others.
I tried to get Jeffrey, but his plate was running over.
I can imagine.
And, you know, he started the chapter in Pennsylvania, the Itchy chapter in Pennsylvania, It Can Happen to You, which I'm also a member of. So, but his plate is extremely full. I have talked to him several times.
I think Jeffrey needs to start a team like the Crump team, because Jeffrey, what he's been through, he can identify and relate to what others are going through. Yeah. So if he could start a group, even a nonprofit where, you know, he could be making money and bringing in other lawyers to work with him, that would be good.
Well, he has his foundation. He does have his foundation.
But is he working solo, or are there other lawyers working with him?
He has other lawyers working with him.
Oh, okay. Now, are you familiar
with
Brett Grody? Brett Grody?
Brett was pretty much the first attorney that I met, and I tried to go through Amistad Law, and I kind of got brushed off a little bit. So Unfortunately, nothing ever came of that, even though, like I said, I'm also a member of CADBY, where, you know, he's very involved with CADBY. But nothing ever came about it. And he was really kind of one of the first people I talked to.
Yeah, Brett, he spent some, not too long though, but he spent some time incarcerated. So he became a lawyer at some point in time. But also, Donna Hill, well, she was Donna Fender from Pittsburgh, had the fight for life. Okay, does Donna do anything to help?
She has not.
Okay, I thought so. But I'll be doing some research to see if I can find resources as well. But the Pennsylvania was a tough one. When those three prisoners died in 2007, I even got the media. They wanted more information, and I asked Donna if she and some others could get the information to the, it was the ABC News, I believe. But they didn't want to bring in, or whatever, they didn't want to bring in media or lawyers. So what I did, I contacted, and he's not practicing anymore. He's from Colorado. His name is Jerry Spence. Jerry Spence is a well-known attorney throughout the country, and I tried to get him to help. At the time, we were trying to get help out in Pennsylvania. He's a law professor now, but he did email his friend, Bill Trine, and he copied to me. Bill Trine is from Colorado, and his daughter, Sherry Trine, had just gotten her license to practice like 2 years before. She wanted to actually go into Pennsylvania and help, but she had to be practicing, I believe it was for 5 years or more before she could do it. So
were
you might want
Brandon Mayfield?
Pardon?
Yeah, are you familiar with Brandon Mayfield?
Mayfield. I've heard the name. I'm not familiar with them, though.
Brandon Mayfield. His case is very similar to Brian's. He was charged with the Massachusetts bombing off of a partial fingerprint.
Okay.
And him and Brian, they did correspond back and forth with each other for some years. But I believe he can't practice in Pennsylvania. But he did give Brian, you know, so he did correspond with Brian some years ago back and forth because he had pretty much a similar thing. He was charged with the Massachusetts bombing.
I know of the Sinaris brothers, but I don't know of the, I've heard the Mayfield one, but I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
When did that happen?
Getting back to Brian. Oh, God, I'm not sure. In the 90s?
Oh, okay.
So getting back to Brian, I mean, he has been busy. I mean, he has written so many people, you know. So, and even, like, you know, I don't mean to talk about Centurion, but, you know, he wrote Centurion in 2010, and it kind of fell through the cracks. And then I started, you know, writing them back. And everybody who, and I even wrote them probably in 2016, and the lady told me, oh, this is too long. I'm not reading all of this. She sent it back to me in an email. People don't want to get involved. And
That's why we have mass incarceration in this country. Do you know the United States of America is the only country in the world that has mass incarcerations over 2.3 million? And not only that, but they're the only, there's no other country that has life without parole or life sentences. The maximum that they have in Germany and in the Netherlands, 25 years. In Norway, 25 years for the maximum. Norway is the role model for them.
Look what they do with their prisoners. They give them a trade. They teach them. They prepare them for their release, and they'll have come out with a trade. Pennsylvania doesn't do that. They have selected prisons, you know, like at Graterford and now Phoenix. You know, they have Villanova University that would go in. So a lot of the juvenile lifers and the life without parole, the wrongfully convicted that I know, they came out with degrees under their belt from Villanova, and I think I forgot the other university. But with Brian at Green and at Cole Township, they wouldn't do it unless you were a certain amount of years to your parole date. But what do you do when you have someone life without parole? And then you can only work in the kitchen or you can only do this. You can't, you know, you can't even get certain jobs in the prison to help you to so you can learn something. And I think that when people are maintaining their innocence then they should be trying to help them by, and it should be open to every single prison, not just some selective ones, not just Phoenix and Greaterford. And, you know, because I know a couple guys that came out with dual degrees. And so now they came out, boom, they hit the, well, one of them just got hired by University of Penn. He's a juvenile lifer, and I'm extremely proud of him. But now he's going to be teaching a class at University of Penn. But because he was in prison, when he was in prison, they allowed him to have this opportunity to go to school and to earn a degree. And, you know, sadly, Brian, his goal in life, he loved cars. He was a typical boy, a typical guy. He loves working on cars. So he was actually in school to get his certificate in auto mechanics, and his goal was to open up his own shop and to actually build custom-made cars. And he was snatched right out of that. They snatched him right out of that classroom. And they had an automotive program at one of the prisons, and Brian couldn't do it because he was a lifer. Now, this is something that he loved to do. And, it's, you know, at least he could have been working on this and gotten some type of degree or some type of certificate. So if they found out that he is innocent, he can come out and then try to pick up his life. But they don't
There's a prisoner. He's been targeted because the family had connections. But this prisoner, he's tried to take – there's five major colleges registered with the Bureau of Prisons, accredited colleges. Adams University is one of them. This prisoner tried so many times to enroll in a higher educational correspondence course through Adams University. He's been denied because he's serving a life without parole. He got a job working in the culinary department. He and the instructor got along well. Two officials went over the instructor's head after 2 weeks or 3 weeks on the job to have him fired. The legislative members have to know this, because they don't have a clue, especially when prisoners try to file for commutations or prisoners try to go up for parole, and they have nothing to show for the time that they've been incarcerated. It's all because they're being deprived of these opportunities. And as you say, they need to have these programs for everyone, not just for those that soon to be released, not those in for 20 years, not those in for 5 years, those who are in for life, those who are in for life without parole, those who are on death row, they should not deprive anyone of any opportunity to better themselves while incarcerated.
Yes,
ma'am. This is Danielle again. So I'm glad you all brought that up. Like I said, besides it being a numbers game, that's the whole point. They want to be a circle, a cycle that doesn't break. You get in prison, you get out of prison, you get in, you get out, get in. If you had the opportunity to do something with that time to, number one, reflect on, okay, maybe if you've done something wrong, to reflect and say, listen, I've done something wrong. I want to do better. So when I get out, if someone's giving you a skill, a trade, or degree, or certificate, you have that opportunity to then go ahead and do something better with your life instead of going back into that vicious cycle. They don't want them to break out of the cycle. It's better there. It's more profitable for you to be in prison than to be out of prison.
Exactly.
So
that's one of the issues I have
with our current system setup. It's not meant for us to ever leave it, because they're not giving you the opportunity to do such a thing. And those that are that have done it, now they're discontinuing these programs. You don't say the Pennsylvania. It actually asks you if you were ever incarcerated. Didn't I know that? It asks you that question, because they can't really ask you that question. So now they're now allowing it to be on applications. So when you see that on the application as an employer, what do you think? You know, it's like, well, I can't really ask you, what are you locked up for? What happened? You know, listen, it shouldn't make a difference. This person's now served their time. They should now be able to get on with their lives, to do better. But no, you don't want them to, because now you want them stigmatized.
It just
blows my mind how, like, and I believe it, we're one of these countries that fight for civil rights and human rights, and I'm air quoting that, but at the same time, our penal system's trash. But
exactly.
Yet you want to talk to other countries about what you're not doing. Just a super thought.
You know something? I get so upset with the politicians. I'm sorry. And I know there's a couple of good ones in Massachusetts. There's a few of them that I really respect. But the legislative members are cowards as far as I'm concerned, because they're the ones that have the authority, the right to make the decisions. And they have the power to make positive changes. But yet, let some of the constituencies get upset with their decision, and all of a sudden they're ready to drop it. They're ready to put it on the back burner. They're ready to stop fighting for that justice. And right now there's a lot going on. The Sentencing Project is actually working with a lot of state organizations to do away with life without parole. And there are coalitions in Massachusetts that are doing away with solitary confinement, restrictive housing. This is the time for change. And if we don't have the backing from our legislative members in this country, we don't have anything. Prisons for profit, you mentioned it. That's exactly what's going on. They want to fill these prisons. Lately, they've been, with all these empty cells, they've been double-selling prisoners to save those empty cells to bring in more. This is something that the legislative members should be fighting against right then and there. Because no prisoner, especially prisoners serving life sentences, should be forced to double cell when there's all these empty cells available.
Yeah, that's true.
It's ridiculous.
It is. It's sad. So we just want, you know, to get Brian's story out there. And, you know, that, like Daniel says, it can happen to you. And as I say, I belong to ITCHI, which stands for It Can Happen to You. It's just a sad situation that, you know, we live in this country that they are so quick to condemn somebody just to, you know, to further their career, put another notch in their belt, and to move up. It's just... It affects, and it's hard on both sides of the wall. I know it's hard for family, it's hard for friends, for children, it's hard for it's hard for the community, you know. And I know I was part of Senator Street's campaign when he was trying to pass the Act 235, not Act 230, SB 135, and I forgot the other one. That would allow lifers to have a minimum after a certain amount of time, but that kind of fell through the cracks. And then they went and they changed the language. And the language that's changed now is actually not as good as it was in the beginning. So I don't even flow with that right now, because it's really not fair the way it's worded. And I just hope that, you know, they can try to word it a different way and, you know, shorten the terms, because there are a lot of innocent men and women that don't need to be in behind the wall. And, you know, more Senator Greenleaf, you know, he was before ending life without parole, and unfortunately he passed away. But he was very instrumental. He was working along with Jeffrey Deskovich and some of the other people about Marissa Bluestein. He was working, and unfortunately he passed away. So, you know, we don't have Senator Dana Leach. I actually went and talked to him, and he was all for it, and then all of a sudden, boom, that he had whatever he had going on, and he, you know, sat down. You know, they get involved, some of them get involved, and then they don't want to continue. And I don't understand why. You know, is someone making them stop or what? But we really don't have anybody that's fighting for our lifers right now.
You know what's happening too? I'm sorry. What's happening too is right now, one of the things, and they have to defund. I'm a sole supporter of defunding, because right now the prison union, the union is so powerful that lawyers are afraid they're not going to win because of the union. And it's happened so many times over and over again. If the union is defunded, if the funds are taken away, they don't have that power.
Yep.
It's just like with law enforcement, the same thing. The unions are so powerful that now lawyers are turning to bankruptcy lawyers and all these other types of lawyers rather than to fight for justice. I was going to ask, too, are any of you involved in the Facebook groups on the innocent, guilty until proven innocent, free the innocent, faces of the innocent?
I'm on probably about every last one of them.
Okay.
I'm sure you've seen me on there, Leola.
You might want to join the ones for mass incarceration, too, and ending mass incarceration. And joining a lot of those groups might help, too. Inmates Are Us, Inmate Rights, Petitions.
Yeah,
you said you had a petition out there for Brian as well?
Yes, we do.
I think I signed it, if I'm not mistaken. Yes, Justice for All, the Justice Foundation, Justice for All.
Justice for Brian Parnell. What's
okay.
The exact website, Danielle? I mean, Veronica?
The website is justiceforbrianparnell.com, and from there you can hit the link to go to the change.org petition.
They also have a group on Facebook called Justice for All and Friends and Promoters of Justice, and they have the Unexonerated.
Justice for All. I'm looking to see if I'm on there.
Yeah, and the Unexonerated, and there's Factually Innocent.
I'm on Factually Innocent, yes.
Okay.
I don't see the Justice for All one.
Okay, you might want to...
I see Justice.
Actually, I'll invite you on there now, and that's Karen.
Okay.
You can invite the others.
I will.
Tamara, let's see if I can get Tamara in there.
Sorry, I'm late. I had to work. I had to work.
Oh, well, sorry to see you leave.
I'm done. I work from home, but I had to do something, a project, so I had to finish it up.
Oh, okay.
So I tried to listen, but it was hard because I'm talking to people.
You know something, though, getting back to all the injustices that go on in this country, it's a shame because too many people have committed suicide because they can't cope with what's going on in the prisons, and too many have been killed. Too many have been kept in solitary confinement without any belongings, and for days, I don't know if you saw on Facebook, they had someone in solitary confinement for 600 days or 695 days, and he came out barking like a dog. And like
no,
I say, there was
too
much.
I do know Chuck Lugo. He was just released last month from Greaterford. He was wrongfully accused at 15 years old, and he just got out. He did 37 consecutive years in solitary confinement. How this man kept his mind, I don't know.
That's it.
He was known to be an encourager. So a lot of the juvenile lifers who had been released, they call him the elder. But he is home now, and he's doing very, very well, I'm glad to say. But he did 37 years consecutive in solitary confinement, and he did a total of 51 years. And he was wrongfully convicted at 15 years old.
That's what I can't understand. How can anybody, if I had the influence, if I had the power to be able to make some changes, you know who I respect very much so, and that's that, what's her name, Alexandria Cortez from New York?
Don't know her.
She speaks out. In the U.S., she's in the U.S. House or whatever, but she speaks out about a lot of...
She's a congresswoman for New York.
I respect her.
I was going to say she's one of the ones that turned over a seat, but she does speak her mind. That's why they don't like her.
Exactly. And you know what? I love people that are not liked, because when they're not liked like she is, that means they're doing something right. I have a high respect for her. She's a very, and she's young. But if she was in Pennsylvania and you contacted her right now, or she was in Massachusetts, I know that we'd be getting the help that we need somehow. Somehow.
Now, since Tam just joined us, I don't know if she wanted to add something about Brian. She can. She's more than welcome.
I don't know what you want me to say. I don't know what you want to know. It's a life.
You're his oldest sister.
I think you guys probably said a lot. I mean, I couldn't.
You know what? With all the things that are going on, with all the injustices going on with the wrongfully convicted, when I hear somebody that doesn't know what to say, there's something definitely wrong. Because right now, we're in a country that is so dysfunctional, and they're putting all of our people behind bars, wrongfully convicted or not, and they're treating them like animals. And if you don't have anything to say, then I'll mute you and let the others say something. But if you can't think of anything to say, whether it be about Brian or whether it be about other wrongfully convicted or whether it be about the injustices in this dysfunctional, crazy, chaos world, something is not right. Just like when I invite the audience to call in and ask questions, we have advocates out there that half the time I think a lot of them are spies. They're getting into these advocacy groups just to know what's going on. They're not doing anything except liking. There's something more than liking. We might be in a country that's so dysfunctional and every state is different. We're not in the state of even Africa, the continent. They're more united than we are in this own one continent country with all these states that are going nowhere fast. People in advocacy groups that are supposed to be advocating for the incarcerated men, women, and youth are up there liking things, but they need to get more involved. They need to be calling in and asking questions. They need to be calling in and giving resources. They need to be writing to their legislative members. They need to be contacting prisoners to let them know they have support. I am so disgusted with this country and everybody in it that can't do anything but talk about the advocacy work they're doing. And I hope the audience is taking this in. And I'm going to tell you something. Some man put it out there on Facebook that these criminals deserve to be inside. They did wrong. Let's remember something. If they at least know anything about God, they know that God forgave Moses, who was a murderer. God forgave King David for not only impregnating his loyal soldier's wife, but for killing him. God forgave Saul, who later became the Apostle Paul, who murdered many Christians. So everybody on their high horse to think that they're not sinners better think twice. If God could forgive them, he's going to forgive every single person in prison, and he's going to be going after the ones that let it go, that weren't there to support these prisoners, that didn't go to visit them, that didn't help them. We live in a gung-ho country. The United States of America is not respected like it once was. The United States is being laughed at by every other country in the world. It's being disgustingly humiliating to all of us. Now, if there's nothing more to say, I'll let one of you say something.
Well, we love Brian. So I think you're missing the – I understand and hear where you're coming from, but this has been a lifelong advocacy for Brian, and you've been probably doing it more longer than we have, and we've known Brian all our lives. And what I meant based on what I believe my sisters and his fiance was saying, they probably – I know they put the whole – giving you the whole aspect of his case. But Brian is a family guy. He has a man. He has three children, and he has two granddaughters and another granddaughter on the way. He had a functioning life, somebody that was loved and has continued to be loved. He's someone that respects humanity. He's another person that respects the law. So, yes, when we saw and found this out to happen to him, we were totally devastated. So was he, because you never could imagine this would happen to someone you love or know. But if it could happen to anybody, it'll happen, because we live in a society that's all about the money. It does
that's
not
it.
Care about people. It does not care about where they come from, whether they're right, wrong, or indifferent. If you do not have an interest economically, far as finances go, you don't matter. Prisons make money all the way around. From phone calls to food, for lodging, all of that. They make money off of these prisons. They place these inmates all the way out in Timbuktu, where families may not have automobiles or transportation or ways to get to them. They make it very difficult. So it is a straight money or cash cow, I like to refer to it as. But Brian is not guilty of anything. He might be guilty of loving people and trusting people too much, but he's not guilty of killing someone, because that's not what Brian is about. That's not who Brian is. It is an injustice to all of us. It is injustice to him, his children, and his grandchildren, because his children had to grow up without him. Now they're trying to make his grandchildren grow up without him. So it's the whole situation with Brian being incarcerated wrongfully, I mind you, is a disgrace, not just to him, but to our whole entire country. It's a disgrace. But this is America. America was brought off the backs of slavery. So we can go on and on about that forever. It is an injustice forever. And until we change the judicial system, nothing is going to change.
Thank you.
We have to get to the head of it to change.
There you go.
Keep fighting. We have to keep pushing in order to get change. I hate that this happened to my brother. I hate it with all my heart that this happened to him. I really do. They have an assault against the black or the brown men. It's like, go get anyone that fits this description. They create a narrative, and whether it's true or not, they don't care. They want to solve it so they can get paid, so they can move up in the rank of their position, and this is the way it goes. It is a machine to make money. Unfortunately, a lot of us are suffering because of it. They never go after the true criminal that has really done the crime, so then we pay the price. Our loved ones pay the price, because we're all in prison, incarcerated. When you have a loved one that's locked up, you have a certain time you can see them, a certain amount of time, and a certain date you can see them. You have a limited time you may speak to them over the phone. You can write letters, but they get chopped up and they go through the letters and they cut up and go through every information that you put on that letter to make sure they vet it, to make sure it's what they wanted to say. So what's a letter if you have a lot of gaping holes or it's all cut up? That's not a letter. That's a travesty. So this whole thing about Brian is hurtful. Not just Brian, but there's so many more like Brian. That's unfortunate. But until we change the judicial system, nothing is ever going to change. We'll be talking about this 50, 30, 20, 100 years from now, if we're ever there to see that. It's going to be the same thing until the judicial system changes, till it gets on the right page and go after the correct criminals. Meanwhile, they're living their best lives or they're deceased. But it's horrible what happened to Brian. Two fingerprints, and really it wasn't his? It doesn't even add up right.
I want to thank you. This is a sister that didn't have anything to say.
Well, I do and I don't.
I was just going to say, I thank you for that, because everything you just said, and I hope you feel better, because I feel better when I let it all out. I want the audience to know what she said is right. You have to build your life around the times that you might hear from your loved one. My loved one has been incarcerated 25 years, going on 26 years. He's been kept in a cell 22 hours a day, with 1 hour out and 1 hour in the morning and 1 hour in the evening. They took away everything. They gave his law books to the prison library. They took his television, his Bible, his books, his clothes, everything. These are the things that go on. We live this every single day. We have to work around whenever those calls are going to come in. We have to pay outrageous calls, and they're working on doing away with calls for prisoners. But everything she said is exactly right. And she's in Pennsylvania. I'm in Massachusetts. Others in California, Texas, Florida, Ohio, all over the country. This is what we have to live and look at. We have legislative members that know. My loved one is on a block he should never have been on because he didn't do anything wrong. But they use this as retaliation because he was filing a lawsuit against them for the civil rights, for preventing him from everything. Agencies like Prison Illegal Services, they went to that prison and they're defending all these prisoners that got attacked by these prison officials and guards. And they know my son was amongst them because there was a riot January 20th of 2020, January 10th of 2020. After they moved those prisoners out that caused the riot, they went on an unprovoked attack. You go on the internet, you type in SUSE, abuses at SUSE Baranowski Correctional Center. You go on there, abuses after riot, and you're going to see it was all over the paper. Prison Illegal Services goes there, and they see my son included, and they didn't help him. They helped others, but they did not help him. But yet they have the nerve to be on a coalition put on by or started by the Sentencing Project. They're on a coalition that I should be on. But in my organization, we are too busy trying to find lawyers to help the abused, those suffering from civil rights violations. The very people we're trying to get to help them are on a coalition that the relatives of the loved ones of incarcerated should be on. But they're getting paid for being on these virtual meetings and claiming to do all these things while our loved one suffers. Being on a block they should not be on because they didn't do anything wrong, and having everything taken from them so they can't even fight for themselves in the courts because they have nothing to fight with. I am sick and tired of this country, and I'll tell you, you said it right. What is your name again? Which one was that? Middle sister?
My name is Tamara.
Okay, Tamara, you said it. You said everything you said is exactly what's happening, not only with your loved one, but with our loved ones all over the country. And it's unfair because, like I say, if it's a politician, if it's somebody influential, if it's a celebrity, if it's somebody that's athletic, they're going to get away with it because they all have this power. And I just saw on the news how they just found out that the elite, the very, very wealthy, have been putting their monies in a secret place where they don't have to pay taxes like we do, like the average citizen. So we're living in a very country that's very unequal and very judgmental, and trying to take all of their monies and put it somewhere else and still make more. They're like greedy little children, rich kids. But like you said, unless we do something about it, unless we have people to fight this with us. Look at George Floyd. He dies a slow death. His murderer gets 22 years in prison and thinks that's too much, fighting it. If it was anybody else, they would have gotten the death penalty or be in for life without parole. What happens recently, we find that George Floyd's, the monument they built of him, was defaced. This country has a lot to learn, and they better start taking some advice and looking at other countries and see why they're successful and we're falling apart. We have another caller, 610, back with us again. Do you have something you want to say? Introduce yourself? No, maybe just listening. Okay, I'm giving it back to you, girls. But thank you, Tamara.
Oh, no, thank you for the work you do. The crusade never dies. You got to keep going on. Keep that fire going. Keep it lit.
Amen. Mm. Karen, are you with us?
Hey, I just want to thank you, Leah, for giving us this opportunity. I was hoping that Brian was going to call. He should be calling any minute. But just want to thank you for helping us to get his story out there on another platform. And I'm going to taking notes and going to reach out to some of these people.
I
want to
thank you. The reason I want to thank you, too, is because you girls are all warriors. And if more family members were involved in their loved ones' incarceration, maybe there would be change. But lawyers will look at an inmate or incarcerated person, and if they don't see the family behind them or friends behind them, then they start to believe that maybe that person is not a good person. So there's a lot of family members.
I had a lawyer tell me that, and you're absolutely right. I did have a lawyer tell me that.
It's happened too often where families back away, whether it's because they're harassed by the police, whether it's because of their pride, whatever the case may be, a lot of families. And the way I look at it is if family members are not there for their loved ones, then maybe that's why the loved ones are incarcerated in the first place. I've actually seen on one of the Facebook groups where a mother said that she was glad her son was in prison because as long as he was in prison, he wasn't doing the drugs. I started a petition. The petition I started was to replace all prisons with long-term residential treatment facilities, long-term residential anger management facilities, long-term residential substance abuse facilities, long-term residential mental health. There's no reason why anybody should be in prison. And when I say long term, I don't mean 5 years or 10 years. I mean as long as it takes. A lot of these prisoners can be treated and be released and go home after 5 years or 10 years or 15 years. Those who are terrorists, if they feel that they're too dangerous or serial killers, keep them in these long-term residential. At least they're getting the appropriate treatment. But to have prisons made of steel walls and steel bars and being confined to your cell most of the time or being forced to double cell, all these things are only making prisoners worse. It's not rehabilitating them. And like one of you girls said, they should have programs for all prisoners, even those serving life sentences. And that's something that they don't do either. But they need to do away with prison. They need to do away with these prisoners being treated the way they're treated.
Absolutely.
I've been advocating for a prisoner in Pennsylvania for a long time, and this prisoner, his mother passed away. His mother was from Pennsylvania, bought a house in North Carolina. His father and his brother, his only sibling, and his father had committed suicide years ago. So it was just him and his mother. His mother died down in North Carolina, left the house, and this prisoner got out of prison. He was a great effort. He got out of prison, and he was trying to get to go to North Carolina to get the house before it went into foreclosure, which it was in the process of doing. They wouldn't allow him to leave the state. And he ended up, weeks or months after getting out, he ended up drinking, and he ended up going back to prison. He's been in now for 3 years, and he won't be out for another couple of years. In the meantime, the house is gone. If they had let him go then, he could have saved it. He could have saved his mother's house, and he could have had a home.
Well, that won't be the case with Brian. He has too many family and friends. Thank God.
Well, get that petition.
You're absolutely correct. That is not happening for Brian. Not on all of our watch. Not happening. And he doesn't have the spirit that would have a defeatness in him. He has a forceful spirit that wants truth to be revealed. He's motivated, he's inspired, and he knows he's innocent, so that keeps him moving and going. So I know that won't be Brian's case at all.
Yeah. Is his mother still alive?
My mom is still alive. Yeah, both of our parents, he's blessed to have his mom and his father alive, and he has a bonus mom. So he's blessed in that area.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. All of you are blessed because you've stuck it out this long and you've stayed close this long. My son, I have seen relatives. My brother just died this year at Cape Cod Hospital of the coronavirus. I have my youngest sister suffering from stage 4 cancer. Another brother died 3 years ago of a massive heart attack. So my son hasn't gotten to see his family. He doesn't even know his nieces and nephews, his cousins. He doesn't even know them. It's been so long.
Oh, wow.
So
sorry.
Brian is blessed. Brian is blessed, believe me. And all of you are so close. I admire that. And I hope the audience hears this, because so many of you that have deserted your loved ones or that can be of help to those who are in prison for wrongful convictions, try to do something about it. Try to make your remaining years on this earth prosperous by helping these wrongfully convicted. Because I'll tell you, this world is coming to its end. We see the signs all around us. People don't believe it, but they don't have much time to prove themselves, and this is the time to prove it by being there for those who are incarcerated, that are being abused, deprived, provoked, harassed, those who are being kept in solitary confinement on restricted blocks, those who are wrongfully convicted, first-time offenders, and many victims who later became offenders. Every situation is different. People have a tendency to stereotype all prisoners. We have prisoners that are in wrongfully convicted, first-time offenders, those who are in for protecting themselves, those who are in for hurting somebody that may have hurt someone that they love. There are all different situations. We have epidemics in this country of mental illnesses, of addictions, including the viruses, the plagues, as I call them. but there's so many reasons why people are incarcerated. And there's so many reasons why we all need to work together to try to undo the damage that this government has done in mass incarcerations. So we have about 4.5 minutes. So if you girls want to once again give your brothers or give Brian's information to the audience, say whatever you want to say in these last 4 minutes, please do.
Go to www.justiceforbrianparnell. On that website, you'll see clips of the documentary that's coming out. On top of that, please sign the petition. We need it. We urge you to sign it. Think of this as this could be you or someone you love, and support. We need more people to support the movement to get wrongfully convicted people out of prison. It's not right. It's injustice to them, and it's an injustice to all of us. So let's think about that and move forward. Let's get these petitions out, get it signed, get it moving. Let's go. Thank you.
Also, please share the petition. Sign it and share it throughout Facebook, throughout your groups, wherever you can get it. The more sharing that's done, the more viral it goes.
Absolutely. Thank you so much again, Leola. This is Karen. This is Karen. And I've said everything I needed to say. Thank you.
Okay,
again.
And I'm hoping that maybe we can have a follow-up on this interview in maybe another few weeks to a month to see how things go. And you can all come back on and talk about whatever progress has been made. And anything you girls send out there that you want signed or anything that you put out on any of these websites or Facebook pages, just ask them to continuously share it so that it'll be seen wherever anyone goes, wherever anyone looks. Send it also. Put a petition together outside of change.org and circulate it. Send it to these legislative members. You know, send it to even to Brian to have him share. Send it to wherever you can to get this message out there. There are a lot of groups out there working towards some kind of change. And whenever you send anything out, just ask that they share it as well.
Will do.
We want to thank everyone for being on with us. And again, hopefully you have the information to get in touch with these girls and also to go to Brian's website. I hope all of you will check it out. In any way you can help, if you were to write to the legislative members in Pennsylvania to encourage them to try to help in these areas of wrongful convictions, whatever you can do, I'm hoping that you will do it. Advocates coming together, family members coming together, and with God, all things are possible. So we want to thank you again, girls, for coming on. I admire what you're doing. I admire that we're working together. And again, we'll get in contact at some point in time and do a follow-up maybe in the next few weeks to a month. We are now
going to be closing.
You. And once again, I want to thank you, girls. Take care and God bless. Hope everything goes well.
God bless you, Beck. God bless you, Dan. It's going
to go well.
You speak it into existence. It's
going to
go well.
It will.
Thank you, though.
Okay. Okay, we are going to be closing now, and I want to thank everyone for listening in, and I hope and pray that you will, again, get in contact somehow with these girls or go on Brian Parnell's website. Whatever can be done will be a great, prosperous event. And we look forward to a follow-up in a few weeks to see how things are going. We are now going to end this episode. Thank you all for coming, and good night.
Good night.